I think that was my favorite meditation song. It was excellent. So I'm going to begin with a story, a former wifetime story. So in a previous wifetime, I was in a relationship where someone accused me of being obsessive and compulsive. Can you imagine such a thing? It was back in the day when I was also having a martial arts school as well as my ministry, and so I had the habit of eating Chinese food every day. And I suppose that contributed to the belief that that was evidence that I was obviously obsessive and compulsive. And so I just wanted to resolve that issue, and so I just asked the waitress, I said, tell me, what do you eat every day? And she said, Chinese food. And so I felt vindicated. Of course, she was Chinese. It was my practice to eat Chinese food every day, this is true, and I would always go to ethnically Chinese, in other words, not American Chinese, but go down to Chinatown or wherever, where they didn't speak much English, and where the menu was in English, but I would often go dim sum houses, so it was just, you know, everything was brought around. But I noticed that over the 15 years, I immersed myself in the Chinese culture, but, you know, I didn't learn one bit of Chinese. I heard it all the time, but I didn't really learn any Chinese. And I've often thought how often I've sat in church and been exposed to the conversation, the principles, the ideas of truth, but not necessarily really learning the language myself. And the reason why I point this out is that until we really learn the language of transformation, the language of spirit, we lack the vocabulary to inform our cognitive capacities to really organize our attention and awareness in the context of a spiritual journey. Until we learn the language to be able to create different order in our own internal dialogue in the context of the dimension of spirit that is the reality that we're wanting to interact with, until that becomes a part of our vocabulary, it's very difficult for us to translate what we hear into a changed life. So the reason why I begin this way is because you're taking time out of your morning, out of your day, to be present. And it's important that when we're present in the intention to open ourselves to the activity of spirit, that we interact with not only the principles but the ideas, but we begin to think in the context that we're having a spiritual experience because we're on a spiritual journey, and that's what's going on in our life, regardless of how it looks or feels. And then when we bring that context to what we're having, it's a total different dynamic that we're present to than if we believe that the world is the way it is and I feel the way I do because of what I'm having as my life experience. And I'm wanting us to understand that what we're having as our life experience is an effect. It's an effect of a creative process. And if we don't understand how that process works, we'll make the mistake of trying to fix what seems to be broken out there in our external world in the context of our discomfort with respect to what we're having in any given moment. And I'm suggesting to you that that's futile and a waste of energy. But that's what we're conditioned to do. We're conditioned that when we have an experience that doesn't look or feel very good, we're conditioned to try to fix or control or have to have things be a certain way. Have you ever tried to do that? And you know it doesn't work, but yet that seems to be the way of our world. And so what I'm wanting to suggest is that there is a different way, but we have to be capable of shifting the context from which we engage what we're having as our life experience, because the way we've been trained and conditioned is that we've mortgaged our well-being on what, in terms of what we're having, as opposed to who we are. And we have to not do that anymore if we're to create a different kind of life experience out there in our world. And so my talk today is entitled The Divine Matrix. It comes from the author Greg Braden, who looks out at the universe and sees a magnificent creation that has as its properties an interconnectedness and an intelligence that if we can plug into and tap into that and draw upon that principle, then we would have a qualitatively different experience in our world, because for the most part, we're tethered to a different kind of reality or a different kind of a potential. And we talked last week about the Matrix, and I'm going to revisit that just for a moment. But what I'm wanting to suggest is that this idea that the reality, the real world, lives in the context of a dimension that is not visible in the context of what we're having, but present in the context of the potential to empower us to be whomever we need to be in the presence of whatever we're having and not feel diminished by that moment or that experience of having. And for us to arrive at that capacity to be with any experience independent of how it looks or feels unto us means that we have to have a different context for what is happening in our life, so that we understand that what is going on is not in the context of some force withholding something that is supposedly to be our gift as God's whole and perfect children, but to recognize that we're out of phase with that abundant good that Jesus proclaims is our divine inheritance. We can't connect to it because we're living in a different world, a different dimension, a dimension that's defined by what we're having instead of who we are. And we got to get out of that. If we're to change what's happening in our life, much less change what's going on in the world. I've talked about a way of conceptualizing the life and teachings of Jesus. I've created this this flow chart or this process map, in a sense, to define the movement from what we could describe as our sleep state, our being unconscious, to a place where we're awake, we're engaged in this dimension called the field of infinite possibilities and interacting with that as opposed to trying to fix what's happening out there. And the process of moving in that direction, or from your perspective in this direction, means that we have to work through all the places where we, because of our being conditioned by this world or by the conditions that this world represents, we've taken on beliefs and ideas that aren't the truth of us. And the only way that we kind of work that out or reconcile what's not the truth of us with respect to what is the truth of us is by virtue of what we're having. If what we're having looks and feels as if it's against us, it just means that it's mirroring our own disconnect. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just that we're out of phase with our highest good, with the dimension of life that has been created to serve the greater good of our capacity to be unto our life, the one. And what's awaiting that expression is our interacting with and making that domain, that dimension, as real as the one in which we find ourselves kind of in bondage to. So as we look at where the world is and where the kingdom of God is and our movement towards unconscious living to conscious living, we have to work through all those places in ourselves that we're not conscious, that produce, that create circumstances and conditions that constitute our own Karmageddon until we own and reconcile the poop that we have placed in our playground. I know I'm getting a little bit far out there. Okay, so until we work through what gets created by virtue of our sense of separation, it's hard for us to kind of step into, okay, I'm ready, God, beam me up. It doesn't work that way. We have to reconcile all the things that are not in alignment with the truth. And so if access to this dimension called the kingdom of God is a vibratory match as opposed to you have to qualify, if it's a vibratory match, then how we align with accessing that dimension is through the heart. The head doesn't do it. The head is living in a virtual world that I call, or we can describe as this matrix, what Jesus called the world. You know, he said, the world doesn't do what I do. You know, my peace I give unto you, not as the world. And so the world is kind of its own artificial intelligence, its own AI. Think of the matrix as this artificial way of actually being human, but it's run by a different intelligence. We are driven by an intelligence that has as its value system conformity, has as its value system measure up, has its, as its value system, you know, live by this standard out there. And that is not the value system, that's not the intelligence that we should be beholden to, but yet we're trapped when we're unconscious because we align with that, bless you. A few of you remembered. Okay, because we align with unconsciously a dynamic that pretends as if what we're having is our reality, but that experience is not the truth of us. That's just an effect of the creative process. When we're living from a limiting belief, we produce an insufficient life external experience. It's not rocket science. It's just what it is. But we can't expect the world to be a different for us just because we want it to be. We have to expect the world to be different because we are being different with it, you see. So I call the matrix this I am what I have self system. So my identity, my well-being is all invested in what I'm having as opposed to a different dimension of self, which is I am who I've come here to be. And when we recognize that this system doesn't work, it doesn't work to necessarily be focused so much on what we're having as if what we have defines us, but to focus on what we're having as it being something that draws the fullness of who we are out. And because oftentimes what we have looks and feels against us, it's the very thing that draws out all of our resistance to owning the truth of who we are as a divine being. You see, the hard things that we have in life are in conflict with our separation, not with the truth of us. There is nothing that you can experience in your life that can eclipse your power to use that situation for you, to bring forth a greater good. It's just that you have to be on that quest to prove that. And I can share examples from my life, and they can be inspiring, but it's not as powerful as the example that you create by you being in your own struggle to make these practices effective and work. You know, from the Gospels, we hear where your treasure is, there your heart is also. And it goes to a principle that our treasure is usually that which makes us feel whole and complete, but it lives often in the context of our emptiness, our sense of wanting to have something that is a condition of whether or not we're okay. And when that becomes the modality of how we are being with what we're having, then the principle is that wherever we place value, that defines us. If we place value on something that we're having, then what we have has us. But if we place value on who we are being in the moment, then that also expresses itself and influences what our experience is. But in order for us to get there, we have to have a different self system. We have to shift out of the context that my identity is known only by my felt sense of what I'm experiencing in this moment by virtue of what I'm having, to understanding that what I'm having is an effect of who I am. And to understand that the whole universe wants me to unfold the imprisoned splendor that is the truth in me, as opposed to use my creative potential to create insufficiency and lack. And so in order for us to really flip this dynamic, to step out of this artificial intelligence that runs us into a conscious, intentional way of being with our moment, we have to flip it. We have to decide, who am I going to be with this that I'm having? What is that spirit inform my awareness that I need to do with this that I'm experiencing? And when we're in that context in relationship to what we're having, we tap into a resourcefulness that's connected to the field itself, basically we step into the holodeck. And we can begin to step into the felt sense of a desired future as if it's happening now. And then we don't have to live separate and apart from our dreams, because the dreams begin to create energy in our attention and awareness, because we live in the felt sense of our well-being and bring that into every single moment of what we're having, so that we welcome what we have because it draws us out. And yes, it doesn't always feel good or fun, but certainly our compulsion and drive in this world to only be frustrated and separate, that's not fun either. So pick which one, which unfun you want. All right, so if we're not deciding how we're going to be with what we're having, what has us is going to create how we are. Can you see how that's so? It's not like there's some force out there that's creating this dynamic. It's just the way it works. We are conscious beings, and we're tapped into a potential that is synonymous with God, because, as Jesus says, ye are gods. And as we awaken to the truth that he calls us to be as he demonstrated, that there's nothing in our life experience that can eclipse the capacity that we possess as whole and perfect children of God to bring forth a presence that can alter whatever we're having and allow it to move forward in and through our experience to move us towards a greater good. But we have to ordain that. We have to bring that intentionality to what we're having instead of succumb to it as if we're a victim. And so who do you want to be? And so here's some suggestions. If you have a cue card, then you know how to use your cue card in the presence of a belief that is limiting. But our point is that the felt sense of a greater good or of elevated emotion opens our heart and connects us to this invisible field of potential. And when we link that felt sense of a greater good with an idea, with a thought that lives outside of that conditioned mind, then we can achieve what it is that we're seeking. Now, one of the things that we haven't spoken much in the almost 3 years that Jane and I have been here is that we haven't talked much about mind, with a capital M, and how mind is underlying all reality. And part of the reason why we haven't really engaged that principle is because what we've wanted to develop is a systematic understanding and context for being able to approach this dimension of ourself and be able to clearly begin to engage the field. But in order to do that, we have to be capable of using our mind correctly. And I'm suggesting that when we're so used to using our mind to try to deal with what we're having, we violate one principle, and that is you cannot change what you created with the same mind that created what you're creating. What you created, you know what I'm saying. Okay, so with that said, we need to be able to access a dimension of ourself that lives independent of our conditioned awareness. And so for that to occur, we have to begin first to step out of that conditioned awareness and generate the felt sense of what we're wanting to be with what we're having. And then when we begin to insert an intention that is linked to this very specific outcome, then we'll find a kind of congruence between our felt sense and what we envision is a greater good and our capacity to own that experience as if it's happening with us right now in this moment, so we don't feel separated from that which lives in the future, but we own the future as if it's a memory that we possess right now. And I've talked about that. Jane and I have both talked about that in other talks. We've talked about it in terms of the to-done list. We've talked about it in terms of reauthorizing yourself, retelling your story. We work with this principle in the cue process. The point is that unless we are participating and engaging the language and the experience of transformation, just hearing the words is insufficient. What I want to do next is to play a couple of movies. I'm going to end soon. Thank God. I'm going to end with a couple of movies, a little bit more conversation, a couple of movies, but I'm wanting to drive home this point that our heart. Our heart is the portal to the divine matrix, to the field of infinite possibilities, where the potential is for us to simply hold in mind a very specific, clear image of a greater good and be able to walk that greater good through every experience that we're having until that greater good manifests in our life. And not to be moving towards something that we don't have, but to be moving towards something that we are, that we're embodying. So let's see what you think.
So what we know is this, is that we have the opportunity to influence that field in ways that we're really beginning to understand. It's done through the human heart. It's not a thinking process. Thoughts are important. The ancients made the distinction between thoughts and feelings and emotions. And it's the feelings that are centered in our heart, what are called coherent, heart-based emotions. We know that when we feel a feeling of love, compassion, understanding, forgiveness, we change the self-esteem. That there is an effect from that, that it changes the electrical and the magnetic fields in our heart, and that those fields literally change the stuff that our world is made of around our bodies. Our hearts are the strongest magnetic field in our bodies, and our hearts are the strongest electrical field in our bodies, much more so than the brain. While the brain does create those kinds of fields, the heart is many times stronger. And what the science now is showing is that when you can change the field that the atom is in, you change the atom, and we're made of those atoms.
So Greg Braden, that was Greg Braden, and so he basically says that when you change the field that the atom is in, you change the atom. And Albert Einstein was said that the field is the sole governing agency of the particle, which basically means there's a greater influence that affects what we're having, and that greater influence is something that we can interact with. It's the field of potentiality that all form arises from. And if the point that I want to make is that when we change the context, we basically change the field. Remember, if you change the field, you change the atom that's in the field that was changed. So what becomes the field is our way of being with what we're having. And so when we change our way of being, we change how we literally perceive and see the moment. If you perceive the moment as if it's against you, when someone judges you, you'll be compelled to react, because that's what our brain is trained to do in the presence of any threat. But if you've trained your brain to welcome all experiences, knowing that they're always for you, if that's the context within which how your perception and meaning-making operate, when someone judges you, you'll say, "Tell me more." Because you know the judgment's not about you. Because you know the judgment is for you. Because it's about what's missing in your relationship, or it's about what that other person needs, or it's about what the relationship needs. But your reaction is caused by the field that you're in, not by what's happening. And so you shift the place from which you are present in your life, and the life experience is different in your presence. This is the law. It doesn't happen any other way. It's something we can leverage. We can create the life that we want, the life that serves the greater good. And so Wayne Dyer would say, intention creates reality, and let me go this way, and that if we want to, who we are being in any given moment informs the field and brings forth the fruit of its kind. So in other words, there's good news and bad news with respect to the divine matrix. The bad news is, because God loves us so much, God will place us in direct relationship with the very thing that is not us, so that we learn to recover from that. And so there's a part of this that if you're being not enough, your life will reflect that. That's the divine matrix. There's nothing broken about that. What's broken is our thinking that the reflection needs to be fixed. You see, no one fixes the mirror. That's insanity. So we're going to be moving into next year in an intention experiment. We're going to be moving into working with this field of potential and working with it in such a way as that we create the energetic field within which healing can happen, within which demonstration of abundance can happen, within which fulfillment of possibilities happen for people who participate in actively engaging this energetic field. And we're preparing our consciousness as we approach this intention, because it's important, because this is what's going on unbeknownst to most of the world. There are groups, thousands, millions of people like us who are coming together to begin to shift the world in consciousness, creating the conscious shift that that defines what this new paradigm, this emergence is all about. I'm going to close with the movie, but before I do, I mentioned Greg Braden and his buddy Bruce Lipton is here, shown in this picture, sitting behind the Q effect, the Q process. They're familiar with our work, and they see us as partners in this great shift, this great transformation. And so we value our partners in this, but we got to know that unless we do the work, unless we engage in boots on the ground, so to speak, with respect to our own spiritual journey, it's not going to happen. So I'm going to end with a movie, and it's just a very short clip. Greg Braden again, inviting us all into this grand experiment that is unfolding before us.
When a certain number of people come together and they choose in a moment of time to create a precise emotion in their hearts, that emotion literally can intentionally influence the very fields that sustain the life on planet Earth. These fields are now implicated in everything from the immune response of humans throughout the planet, climate, weather patterns, cycles of war and peace, our ability to solve problems, our cognitive abilities. All of these, as different as they sound from one another, are all linked to our relationship to the magnetic fields of the Earth. So what makes this so beautiful is every human on the planet is linked to the field, but not every human on the planet has to be consciously aware of their relationship to benefit from what a relatively few number of people come to understand. And the bottom line is this, is that when we choose to feel feelings that create what is called coherence in our bodies, coherence is the language, the quality of the language between our heart and our brain. Certain kinds of heart-based experiences, such as appreciation, gratitude, forgiveness, care, compassion, those are the ancient understandings that have always been taught in the truest traditions of our past. And now our own science is finding that those same traditions are now documenting this very real effect in our hearts. When we can feel those feelings in our bodies, they're mirrored in the field, and everyone benefits from the experience of relative healing.
So I'll just end with this. There's only love. That's the field. God bless you all.